Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Power of Reinvention. I hope everybody is doing great today and feeling good and somewhere where you can just sit and enjoy, or maybe walk and enjoy this episode, as I have my wonderful guest, Jenny Rooney, on the podcast with me today. Hi, Jenny. Sorry, I'm tongue-tied. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Kathy. It's so good to see you and be with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. So, friends listening in, Jenny and I met not even 6 months ago for the first time. How we have not crossed paths is beyond me, because we have so much history of being in so many of the same rooms together. But we very quickly connected, and I asked her to join me on this podcast because I feel that with the background that she's had in the marketing industry, experiential events, content, the advertising and media business, she has such an incredible perspective on so many touch points in our industry and peripheral industries that I was really excited for you, Jenny, to join me and to have this conversation that we're going to have today. So for those who don't know you, I'm just going to give a little background and they'll understand why I so badly wanted to have you on here with us. Jenny's an award-winning innovator, curator, and connector among the world's leading CMOs and beyond. She's built a professional reputation as a trusted, unbiased thought leader, trend tracker, and visionary. She served as a business journalist for more than 25 years, covering the advertising, marketing, and brand industry, and exclusively executive-level marketing decision makers. She's conceived of and successfully launched multiple initiatives, platforms, series, and events for CMOs, other C-suite executives, and the broader advertising and marketing community. She's cultivated an extensive and valuable network of relationships with the most influential global chief marketers, business leaders, educators, and futurists. She is currently the chief experience officer at Adweek. She's tasked with bringing a community-first lens to everything Adweek does, creating new initiatives, resources, and experiential offerings to better connect with and serve marketing decision makers and the overall marketing ecosystem. She previously served as managing director and co-founder of CMO House at Black Glass. Prior to that, she spent 10 years at Forbes as communities director, assistant managing editor, and editor and chair of the CMO Network. She's interviewed hundreds of CEOs and CMOs as part of her ongoing Forbes CMO video interview series. She led the world's most influential CMOs list, developed the Forbes CMO University alumni series, conceived of and launched Forbes CMO Next, an annual list of 50 game-changing CMOs, and oversaw development of the Forbes 30 Under 30 in marketing and advertising list. And her list of accolades goes on, and I could continue, but we're going to talk about all this stuff. And I really wanted to share that the gravitas of what you've done, the rooms you've been in, the people you have connected with, the initiatives that you've created, just speak volumes to you, not only to your brilliance and your tenacity and the hard work, but to the creativity that you've also brought to so much of the industry. And I think in the world of media and advertising and agencies and brands and marketing, that connective tissue and the art of marketing with and for and to the marketers takes a very special skill set. And God knows what else, maybe a couple of cocktails, but, you know, kudos to you and what you've done, right? But thanks, Jenny. Again, I really wanted to take a moment for us to dig into, I think, what will be a really special conversation today that speaks to, as you know, we talk about reinvention in this show. We talk about the opportunities, trends, growth, pivoting, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, things that require change. And I feel that not only through the lens of what you've been doing, but the industry as a whole has gone through so much change in the 25 years that you've really been playing with it, involved in it, and a big part of it. But before we get into all of that, I'm actually going to take you back in time. And I really want to kind of start with one of my fun questions. First fun questions is, who was little Jenny? You know, when you were growing up, did you have any idea that this was would be the world, the industry, kind of the, you know, the career that you would end up in? When, you know, were there early signs of the kind of leadership that you have shown in what you're doing?
So first of all, Kathy, thank you so much for having me. I love that you have created this podcast. I've listened to the conversations you've had with many of my friends and peers. You know, I love the mission and the purpose and the focus of your podcast. So thank you. And you're right. We should have met a million years ago, and it's crazy that we didn't. But you know, I love that you took initiative like right out of the gate and you said, I want you on the podcast. Let's have this conversation. So thank you very much again. You know, when I was little, I guess, look, I never divined that I'd end up in the marketing, advertising, media industry, to this extent, certainly not. I always knew I wanted to work for magazines. And then, in fact, when I was five, I couldn't pronounce it right. I'd say Mazagine.
Oh, and, cute.
you know, I think what's interesting is I ended up, so I'm not really far afield from what I aspired to be as a little kid. You know, I loved writing. I loved printed pages of words. And look, I mean, as a kid of the 70s and 80s, that's what you had in your house, right? There were no devices. It was all printed pages and beautiful magazines with extraordinary photographs. And so I just loved the physical form of a magazine. I really, really did. I just gravitated to it. You know, my mom and dad were very, they were folks who, you know, the concept of words was very strong in my household growing up. The concept of communication. Both my parents were extraordinary communicators verbally. You know, that was sort of the environment I grew up in. And so I think it was a mashup of that that led me down a path of, you know, yes, wanting to, you know, be in that realm where I could be a communicator through the written word. And so, you know, I think back then it was consumer magazines because that was the big thing that everybody aspired to at the time. It was going to work for Glamour in the city, or, you know, going to work for Backpacker magazine in Emmaus, Pennsylvania, where Rodale Press was based. And when I, you know, when I got to college and grad school, it was a time where it was really tough to break into the consumer magazine industry. The jobs were just not to be had. So
was it tougher as a woman, or just tough in general?
You know, I'll tell you honestly, Kathy, that was never something that I personally felt. I also though felt like it wasn't part of my, the way I regarded myself. I didn't ever, and you know, credit again to my parents who never in any way created a situation where I could ever doubt myself or my abilities to do anything.
Amazing.
You know? And so my being a woman, to be honest, it didn't
factor. It was irrelevant. Yeah. I have the same perspective, which we'll talk about another time, but I completely appreciate that because it's never to me been like, oh, I'm a woman-owned business. I'm a this. I should ask for less. I should ask for more. It was never a factor. So I appreciate that point of view.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think it was a consequence of the economics at the time. And, you know, it was tough to find jobs. And I ended up, the work that I found out of grad school was in business magazines, right? It was trade magazines that enabled you to have opportunity. And at that point, I didn't care what I was writing about. I just wanted to write. I just wanted to learn how to be a reporter. I wanted to learn how to interview people. You know, I did a lot of practice of that, obviously, in grad school. One really cool story that framed a lot of my perspective on the work still that I hold true to this day was in my master's thesis in grad school. So I got a master's in magazine journalism at the Scripps School at Ohio University. And my master's thesis was on Vietnam War correspondent Michael Hare. And he was basically a stringer. He wrote for Esquire magazine and Rolling Stone, and he went to Vietnam as a freelancer. And he felt that the only way he could really truly tell the story was by being, you know, in the trenches with the folks fighting the war. And he felt that to feel the experience as a journalist was foundational to telling the right story. And interestingly, at the time, he was really a known recluse. You know, he lived in upstate New York. He had not granted interviews to anybody at the time of my outreach to him as a student since 10 years prior, when he granted an interview to Time magazine. 10 years later, I'm a second year master's student in writing my thesis, and I looked him up, and at the time he didn't have internet, of course. So I found his address. I sent him a letter and I said, I'm working on a thesis. Would you grant me an interview? And off the letter went, and I didn't think I'd ever see it again. And I didn't expect to hear from him. I planned to be able to write the thesis without an interview with him, right? You have to have a plan B.
Right.
But I'll never forget. I came back from the dining hall and my phone was ringing, and this is a phone that's
Right. I can totally picture it. Yep.
And I answered the phone. He said, hello, is this Jennifer? And I said, yes, it is. And he said, this is Michael Hare.
Oh my gosh.
And I mean, I just about, you know, dropped whatever I was holding.
Yeah.
And I got my recorder. I got my pencil. I got my notebook. And I just said, well, thank you so much for calling. Let's do this. I interviewed him. And at the end of the conversation, I said, Mr. Hare, I'm sorry, but I must ask you, you know, I know you haven't granted interviews in 10 years. What caused you to want to do this and let me interview you? And he said, I liked your letter. And he's like, you wouldn't believe the amount of asks that I've gotten over the last 10 years. People just demanding something of me, asking for my time and feeling entitled, you know, to ask me for things. He's like, I loved how you just basically... I think he must have thought that my simplicity in the ask, you know, asking for the bare minimum that he was willing to give, and perhaps an air of respect in the way I wrote it,
and thoughtfulness. Yeah.
And so it stuck with me because I think there's every single words hold so much power. They hold so much strength in everything we do, and no matter how big or small. Communication has to be so thoughtful. And so anyway, that's just sort of a backstory. You know, we all have those moments in our, certainly in our childhood, but also in our early development where, that we refer back to as being, you know, very, very formative in how we think about, interactions with people. So,
yeah. And you know, the curious nature, and I love what you said about growing up in a home where the word, the written word, the spoken word, the communication was such a core piece of your life. And it's funny, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you wrote a book. That's amazing. Like, you know, did you always want to be an author? I never thought about being an author until I had an epiphany about a topic that I felt needed so much light shed on it and so many perspectives on this notion of being able to reinvent a part of our lives. And it wasn't until that moment where I felt like I had a lot to say and I was writing articles and blogs and speaking a lot about it. But it never dawned on me to write a book. And now I look back and I think, wow, I spent my whole life as a teenager from the age of 9 to 15, probably, writing journals. And I started out in the PR business and writing, communication, storytelling, capturing the essence of a story and sharing it in some way, shape, or form, whether it was a caption or an article or a press release, was always a part of my DNA. And I really just kind of took it for granted. And I think when you grow up with so much of that in your life, it's such a natural direction. And the spoken word, the written word, every word does matter and counts.
Yeah. And I think a consequence of that is the relationship, right? At the end of the day, that is a conduit to relationship. And so, you know, my relationship with Michael Hare lasted all of, you know, what, 45 minutes on the phone that day.
Quite a bit.
But it's affected me the rest of my life. So, you know, I think that's what also has to follow from being intentional with communication. And so, you know, that kind of got me obviously down the path of journalism, and I went from, you know, I went through a bunch of different magazine, business magazines, in the 2000s. And it was such an incredibly exciting journey because so much was happening. My first sort of foray into the advertising marketing media world was, as a reporter for Advertising Age, back in 98. And I was a reporter covering interactive agencies. They didn't even call them digital back then.
Right.
And, Scott Donaton actually hired me.
I was just going to ask if Scott was there when you were there. Yeah.
So he hired me that first time. He ended up hiring me back a second time in 2005, to come back. But, he really gave me platform for exploring this industry for the very first time. And I never look back. I mean, it's been since 98 that I've been covering this specific industry. You know, that's when I basically started to build my beat. So it's kind of like, you know, my craft was writing and journalism and interviews. Mm. That was the craft that I had learned. The subject matter became the advertising, marketing, brand industry. And more importantly, as time went by, the people who comprise it, right? So I quickly personally gravitated, you know, less so towards the tactics of this industry and much more so towards the people who are making the decisions daily. So, you know, fast forward to today, you know, there's just advertising, marketing, media, the industry itself and the people who comprise it have been my beat for lack of definition, for decades. And so it's really only been in the last, you know, 3-4 years that I've taken that experience and transitioned into the roles that I've had, most recently, including my role now at Epic. So
yeah.
I'm not in a practical journalism role anymore.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. It's fascinating. Yeah. And you said it before, it wasn't so much the tactics as much as it was now the people in the industry. And what I find so fascinating is that the industry has sort of evolved. There has been such a change in the way we market, the way we communicate, the platforms, the medium, the media, the content initiatives that are now driving everything, storytelling. I mean, God knows, I feel like I was storytelling 30 years ago when I was writing press releases about my clients. We just didn't call it that. Companies were brands. We just didn't call them brands.
Again, words right? matter.
And, yeah. And I kind of laugh when I hear some of this because everybody's making such a big deal out of what it is. And yes, it's the new incarnation of all of it, but storytelling is not new. Brands are not new.
It's
the language and the vernacular that we are using and attaching. You said interactive agencies, and I kind of smiled because interactive business that we did as an agency meant experiential events. And then when interactive became a digital term, we had to rebrand what we were calling interactive events to experiential events because now the digital world was owning interactive, you know. So it's so interesting because things change, but they stay the same.
Well, it's interesting you say that because one of the things that I feel I'm very grateful for is, you know, over the course of my career, and again, you know, I mean, literally going back to late 90s till now, it's been a nonstop front row seat to the change. You know, I mean, I can take you back to, that the rise of, you know, interactive agencies and ad serving networks and cookies and all that, moving into the rise of, you know, the boom and bust of the dot-coms and, you know, I was on countless talk shows talking about Super Bowl ads from pets.com and drugstore.com, et cetera, et cetera, in my early 20s, which was incredible and fun, you know, to the recession, frankly, to 9/11, first of all, you know, because you have to remember that obviously everything that's happening culturally and economically, those are the big, huge inflection points that rock the industry. And so you can't obviously regard the industry without acknowledging, you know, all the macro forces that are affecting it. And the big ones obviously are culture and economics. And so, you know, 9/11 lived through that. And, you know, and then the you know, the fallout that came from that in the world, you know, and in the economy and everything else. And then to get to, you know, 2008, when my daughter was born and a recession hit, you know, and there was the rise of procurement on the client side. So again, you know, you start to track this,
the impact, right?
and all the changes. And so, you know, and then obviously 2020, which the irony is everybody thought 2020 was going to be this just massive inflection year where it would be, you know, marketing 2020 would be this thing, like a, and it was certainly
a thing.
For none of the reasons that anybody anticipated. So yeah, it's been, I think it's just such a fascinating, ever-changing, dynamic industry. And I do feel really, really grateful for having had that front row seat up until now, and continue to have that. So,
right. And I, you know, I love that you're saying that, because you really do, you do have that front row seat, but you're also a creator. You have been a creator. You are not just passively watching it going by. Mm-hmm. And I know in all the interviews and the conversations you've had, and I've had the pleasure of watching you interview people, you go there, you dig deep, you unearth things that some people aren't stopping to think about, or that we may take for granted in the day-to-day of what we do. And, you know, we can't take for granted. Change is constantly upon us. The digital era has exponentially increased the pace at which we have to keep up with what's going on. You know, yes, the pandemic had an extraordinary impact on the advertising business, experiences and events, people having to, you know, really make pivotal decisions. And I think, you know, what's so interesting, I've always had a theory as a marketing agency and marketer for all of our clients that, and it's sort of this is the rebel in me. This is the why did Kathy start her own company and never work for anybody else person in me, which is, I don't believe you should test things. I think you should do them with intention. When you want to test a concept or test a campaign or test a thing, you're really not doing it with the intent of it being a massive success. Mm-hmm. You're testing it so you can put your arms, fold your arms, lean back and say, let's see how many ways this is going to go wrong and not work, and prove to ourselves that this may not be the way to do it. Mm-hmm. And I have a philosophy that if you lean into something with full intention and you're set out to make it successful, you'll do everything in your power to figure out how to make it work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the industry had a big wake-up call during the pandemic when it was like, oh, we have to pivot in 35 days and do something differently than we've ever done before. And there is no time to test it, and there is no time to do it. And by sheer necessity, things had to happen quickly. Mm-hmm. Creative, content, virtual campaigns, moving conversations and meetings to digital. I mean, everything that we had to do was such an aha moment, of course, across every industry. But in our world, the media, the platforms, the content, the messaging, people had to perform at a level they'd never understood was possible. Mm-hmm. They might have sort of fantasized about it, but suddenly had to be that. And I'm so curious, like being in the middle of all of these conversations with all these people, what was the dialogue? What were the conversations? What was the reticence and the fear? I mean, the fear of failure always plays so big in this industry, especially. But I'd be really curious to kind of hear from the inside out what you were hearing as people were going through this, because it was game-changing, and I think a very valuable learning experience, and as I believe had an impact on the way people now are operating in a lot of companies. So would love your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the concept of, you know, fail fast has been around for a while. It wasn't coined with the fallout of 2020. I think though post pandemic, there was no more room for not doing that. I mean, action had to, you know, and I think we all as human beings, and it's natural that, you know, you want to take time and you want to be measured. And I completely agree with you on this concept of being intentional. But it was finally a time when people just needed to take action, and they needed to take all their best information that they had available to them at the time and do, and show up, right, and react. And because there was no time for, you know, and pivot is an overused word, but there's that, you know, what a pivot to me means is doing a 180 or doing things so dramatically different that you're going to get an out, but you need to do, the means is how you get to that outcome that you actually have to obviously achieve. So, you know, I think we saw there wasn't enough time, frankly, for people to be almost risk averse. It felt like they were just sort of, you know, it was, everybody was sort of in adrenaline driven action mode.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that's really good to experience. I'm not saying anything about that was good, but you know, you have to, I think so many people probably, you know, listen, there's just a lot of inefficient ways of doing things. And when something like that happens, a crisis happens, you need to just act and you don't have the luxury of time to regard and assess and look at things differently. And so a lot of the conversations I was having were, sure, people were fearful. People didn't understand. There was a lot of lack of understanding. And I think there was also a need to be able to talk to other people who were going through the same thing and feel like they had, not just sounding boards, but they had, other minds to pick and other, you know, collaborative spaces for mutual learning. And and that's just human nature, right? I mean, I think that's, and listen, marketing leaders are some of the most agile, dynamic, creative, thoughtful, intentional, caring, purposeful, passionate people I've ever met.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think it was a moment for them to rise to the occasion and shine. And I think some of the work and some of the, and I don't mean just creative. I don't mean just creative executions or sort of, you know, outward looking stuff. It's what they did with their teams internally. It's what they did with their, you know, how they collaborated with their C-suite leader, you know, C-suite leaders. It's how they reached out to their peers in industry.
Yeah. I feel like it almost, it was a moment in time that brought people together in ways they'd never communicated before, right? That there was a true reinvention in the internal mechanism. I remember one president of a company at big agency said one day, the box has just democratized everybody. Mm-hmm. And it created a more, it bred an environment for more open dialogue, more open communication, and from the senior people to really be tuning into the junior people and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And that was unusual. So I think, it was quite a seminal moment in the experience between. And I love what you said about marketers, that they are all of those qualities. And I think we're seeing, you know, the power of the CMO in these companies today, having to wear that many more hats than ever before. What's your perspective on sort of the marketer's role today? We're seeing, you know, so much change and so much responsibility.
Listen, I mean, that is just the perennial question that I think everybody continues to struggle with. I think it, listen, there's no one size fits all, which I think CMOs get lumped in a bucket. Cause I think a lot of us like to have conversation and it's probably the aspects of being a CMO that, center on the creative aspect of it, you know, and, but depending on what kind of company you're in, whether it's B2B, B2C, you know, tech companies vastly different than CPG, et cetera, it's going to be a highly different mandate. Now there's some consistencies obviously, but it's so context dependent that I think it's just important to regard that and continue to regard that. So, you know, but the role, I think it has to be, the role continues to have to be marketing, not as as a cost center, but a true investment in growth, you know? Yeah. And I think it's on CMOs to be able to continually articulate that to the CFO in terms they can understand and acknowledge and internalize. Likewise with CEOs. And listen, I think it's incumbent upon CMOs to have that dialogue with, you know, if they're considering a role, to have that dialogue with a CEO of a company that they're going to work for, to make sure that they have that buy-in and they have that alignment out of the gate. Because otherwise, I've just seen so many situations where it just doesn't work out, you know, and you can be the most creative thinker, you can have the best strategy. But if you're not aligned and there's not a true acknowledgement and acceptance and support for that kind of unique business strength within an organization, I just don't think that CMOs are set up for success. So, you know, the only other thing I'll say is I think CMOs have historically taken this kind of this default position around, like, you know, dialogue around CMOs is often about all the forces that work against them.
Interesting.
I think it would be in their best interest. I mean, we need to reframe that dialogue because they have so much strength and power to affect change within their organizations and be strategic and not just be sort of subject to those external forces. Like, they have to be a force.
Yeah.
And they have to get that gravitas and they have to have that, that same kind of, confidence and,
yeah,
and belief in their strength and necessity within organizations,
yeah,
to tell their own story in new, and very powerful ways. So,
well, that's, you know what, and I think, I feel like the world is gravitating, or the industry, to recognizing a little more of what you're saying. And you know, even when you look at some of the recent conferences we've been at together that you're putting on, you know, with Adweek, it feels like there's a little bit more of a human side to the conversations. And when I say human, I mean, how are we trying to tap into our best selves? You know, it's a big conversation I'm having every day with people in the reinvention conversations that we have, because people are really trying to pause and reflect and expand who they are as humans. You know, there was a world where we were never allowed to bring our whole selves to the job. We weren't allowed to talk about, I mean, I did because I ran my own business, so I could do whatever I wanted. But for the most part, all of us were told, you know, just show up, do your job and go home. You like to take photos, good, play with that at home. You like dogs, play with that at home. Now the dogs are popping on the screen. Yeah, I did that photo collection on the wall behind me. You raising your hand saying, hey, if we're doing a photo shoot, that's my passion. Can I, you know, that there, people are being invited to be more human, and that really contributes tremendously to any connection with other, sure, people, let alone what they're doing in the workspace, and makes people happier. And, sure, you know, I think that respect for humanity, I come from Australia, and Australia, you know, it's all about living life, not working. And, you know, you put your phone down and your computer down at 5 or 6 o'clock at the end of the day, and you are done, and you don't pick it up, and you don't look at what's going on at 10 o'clock at night. And you do take the weekends off, and you do take long lunches. And it's a very different mentality, that I feel now here, we are all kind of a little more kind of into the respect and appreciation of it. We've, mm-hmm, all got to get the job done. So there's a balancing act to be done. But the, mm-hmm, fact that we're even questioning how to create a bit more of that balance, you know, are you seeing that more with your peers, your friends, the people you work with? Of course, as I said before, you're trying to sort of introduce an element of that creativity and humanity, even in the conferences that you at, yeah, Adweek are putting on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I sort of am seeing that sort of leaning into that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think over the years, again, I'm grateful for the relationships that I've been able to build with these people. And they're really, truly personal relationships. You know, you have to get to know people as individuals first and their work secondarily. But you know, I think if you lead with a focus on that, you're going to create environments that are much more real, much more candid, you know, and ultimately much more enriching and valuable, you know. And, you know, I know that I think there's also a receptivity to being vulnerable, and vulnerability is also super key, and humility is super key,
yeah,
you know, and being able to also be able to be in environments where you feel safe and you can basically ask the dumb questions and say, you know, this is something I don't understand, or this, yeah, is something that I definitely need help understanding. And so,
and I do feel like people are feeling safer to do that than
absolutely
ever before. Right.
Yeah.
I love that. So, question about you, not a question for you, but a question. Speaking of candor and vulnerability and feeling safe. Now I'm just curious, as you were transitioning from these different jobs, I mean, you know, we, yeah, shared at the very beginning of the episode, some really incredible career moves that you've had. Were those moments scary? Were they challenging? Were they opportunistic? Like, did you have, and I ask this because so many of our listeners are contemplating some mm-hmm. kind of a reinvention in their life. It could be personal, yeah. it could be spiritual, it could be career. You know, that moment of, oh my God, I can't do it. The paralysis of it, the fear, the, oh, I'll wait a few years, I'll stay where I am. That looked like a great, you know, the all that stops people in their tracks from those opportunities to grow and to fulfill a dream and to live their life with a little more passion in one way or another. You know, that can be very paralyzing, that fear of change and that fear of failure or risk in going from where you are that you're comfortable with to something else. What were those moments like for you as you went through your career path? And it's been quite illustrious.
I love that question, Kathy. That's a great question. Let me start by just saying really quickly as a little bit of background, and I don't know if this is why I have this mindset, but I will say that one of the things I didn't tell you about my early years growing up is that I moved not just houses or towns, but I moved states every 2 years from age 8 until age, until I got to college. So basically, I kind of got used to the concept of change being just part of my existence. And so what I mean is, you know, I moved from New Jersey to Houston, Texas, to Connecticut, to Houston, Texas, to New Jersey, to Ohio, to Chicago. You know what I mean? And I know a lot of people who move. Yeah. For me, it was just so, and now I have two kids of my own, and I could never in a million years imagine.
Picture, right. Oh, and was God. This because of your parents' work and that took you moving?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It was my dad's job. Yeah. Wasn't military. He worked for, you know, he worked for a bank, and every time yeah. he got a promotion or, you know, it was a new territory right. for him overseas. Right. And so, you know, and I can't even imagine how my mother did it because I mean, just being, having to pick us up as kids and like, I mean, literally just everything moved to a different house and town and community. And frankly, back then, you know, I mean, those were vastly different parts of yeah. the country that felt very different. Yeah. But anyway, I want to preface this, the answer to this with that, because I just think that informs a little bit about how I think about things perhaps. But the other thing I'll say is specific to my career journey and the moves that I made. My dad would always say, you know, at the end of the day, we're all independent contractors. Now that might be a polarizing comment because people can interpret that in different ways. I grant you, but for me, it was like, it empowered me.
Yeah.
It made me think about the fact that at the end of the day, this career journey I'm on is mine and mine alone. Right. And I'm making the choices. Nobody's making them for me.
Yep.
And it wasn't like a haughty thing. It wasn't like a, oh, well, I'm in charge. And,
no,
you
but,
know,
but it's a confidence thing of knowing yeah. who's in control.
Exactly. So like that always resonated with me, this concept of, you know, at the end of the day, you're an independent contractor. Like it's at will employment. You decide where you want to go, and I also use the word adventure. So like I always applied the concept of adventure to every new opportunity that came my way. And, you know, I just saw it as an awesome chance to learn. Yeah. It was just always about, you have to make every situation work for you. And you don't always know all the reasons why opportunities come your way. And by the way, negative situations, you don't even know. But when you look back on the fabric of your life, because I feel like your life is a quilt and every sort of experience and touch point and person you meet, you know, creates those
squares,
fabric patches,
right,
that are comprising your quilt. And so
love that.
Pick your metaphor, but, I didn't shy away from those opportunities. If anything, it got me really excited. And my thinking was always like, let me challenge myself. Let me see what's possible. I might fail, but what's the worst that can happen? I will have learned something, you know? So paralysis has never been something that's defined me. So.
And I cannot even tell you, you can see me, not everybody can, but as Jenny has been answering this question, I am so glad that I asked it. I did not know the answer I was going to get, but no wonder we're so connected. We're kindred spirits in our perspective and the way we've grown up. And I always say to people that I see change as an adventure, and I've picked up and moved and lived in different countries over and over and different homes, and had to be the girl on the playground that walk up and go, "Hi, my name's Kathy. I'm the new girl. Will you be my friend?"
Totally.
You know, watch me at a conference. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I could talk to the wall for an hour. I will know half the room in an hour. Like, that is my MO. I'm so comfortable being the person in the room that doesn't know everything, doesn't know everyone. And that change is an adventure in my life. And what else can I learn and grow from? And it had a lot to do, frankly, with why I wrote the book and started the podcast. That a lot of people don't realize what opportunities are out there, and they are paralyzed by the fear of change, potential risk or failure, whatever you want to call it. All those things are just little hiccups. They're little moments in time. They're little moments that you learn from and grow from. And working through them to the other side is usually pretty rewarding. And whether it's self-discovery or attaining what you want or really going in a direction towards something that serves you better, it opens up all those doors. And easy for us to say when we feel like we can come at life that way, not easy for everybody, but the little reminders of the baby steps. And I always talk to people about, you know, putting a plan together. It may be a 5-minute plan, it could be a 10-year plan, but taking those baby steps. And every time you accomplish one of those baby steps, just kind of patting yourself on the back saying, "Hey, I did that. Now I can do the next. Now I can do the next." Surrounding ourselves with people that support our dream, our vision, our passion, whatever it is. It's just so critical. So I just love that we are so on that similar wavelength in terms
really
of how
are.
We look at things. And it's wonderful.
And, you know, listen, I fear failure just like anybody else. Yeah. You know, I don't want to make mistakes. I don't want to make missteps. I mean, nobody does. But if that holds you back, it keeps you from the fruits that you just described, you know, just the learning, you know, just learning to your point, learning about others, learning about yourself, learning about what's possible and what you're capable of. So, yeah. You know, that's a good trade-off in my mind.
Yeah, I love that. Before we go, I have to ask you my closing fun question, which is, and you've been in some pretty incredible rooms in your life, but I want you to think beyond our industry, most likely. If you could have a dinner party and have 3 or 4 really incredible, special to you, not the world, but to you, people around your dinner table, they could be alive or not. Who would you want to be having that conversation with? Who would you want to interview? Who would you want to drink wine with or tequila with? And just who intrigues you that you'd love to chat with?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll start with Edgar Allan Poe because my dad used to read me his stories. And I was an English literature and creative writing major in college. And so, like, you know, those were scary stories you read to before you went to bed at night, but just fascinating minds. And frankly, any of the romance poets, I mean, the romantic era poets, I loved reading all that when I was in college. Michael Hare would be lovely, you know, if in this imaginary world I could sit down with him and, you know, all these years later have a conversation with him. I'm a huge sports star. I did sports fan.
Like, wait a minute. Dad, are we taking this interview in a new direction too?
Didn't you know?
Didn't I know?
Didn't I tell you? No, sports fan. Yes. And specifically women's soccer. And oh, yeah. I did have the really great pleasure of interviewing Mia Hamm several years ago, but it was quick and I would love to get her at a dinner table again. Yeah. I obviously think some of the folks who are in that realm right now are really incredible. And any of my friends listening, if I don't say this, they're going to wish I did, but Jerry Garcia and John Bon Jovi, probably different people in the world, but they were very informative. And a little Led Zeppelin thrown in there.
Oh, so I love that. That's anyway. That sounds like an extraordinary comedy. I mean, imagine the conversation. You know, yeah, like that truly, that's awesome. I love that. And it just speaks volumes to, you know, what would that twinkle in your eye and what would be really special. And
so it would have to be on a beach because that's my favorite. That's
okay. I love that. Okay. Yeah. I'm coming. I'm
meet
there.
You, I'm
there.
Kathy.
I'll meet you there. Jenny, this is incredible. I know this is just for us the beginning of many, many more conversations, and I look forward to it. I really appreciate your perspective and sharing today on the show and just for your time. And thank you. Thank you for being a guest here.
Thank you, Kathy. And I, and before I go, I have to thank my husband, the love of my life, who I've been with for over 20 years, and my two beautiful children, PJ and Emily. They are my world, and nothing I do could be done without them.
They enable you, as I say with my husband and my children. They give me the platform from which to fly and do all the things I do. And I love that you mention them and reference them for that, because it gives us a lot of latitude to be who we are, and that's pretty special. So thank you for that. Thank you for being here. And for those who want more perspective on any part of reinventing anything in your life, please check out the reinventionexchange.com. Lots of blogs and podcasts and virtual chat sessions. You can pick up a copy of my book there, or go to Amazon or Apple. Share it with friends and just continue to be open to what's possible. Big question that came up in a wonderful retreat I was at last week, and I'm going to start using this more, is just think, what if? ... So happy reinventing. Have a wonderful day wherever you are. And Jenny, thank you again. So great to talk to you. Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, and discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat Series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend, and thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.